Time to get busy.
Like we always do about this time.
Jonathan Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
He was going the right way. Cohen, all the way. Touchdown, Chicago.
There won't be some Rams renaissance with this Bears team. That's just not happening. Even with Mitch Trubisky, you may have the jersey, but you don't know what that guy really is.
To market it, to answer. Come on.
Oh, bang, bang, bang. Sriracha.
Joseph Sikora.
I think I saw you in a commercial with Michael Jordan. Were you with Jordan?
With Michael Jordan, yeah.
What was your line in that commercial?
It is Michael Jordan.
That's all you had.
It's time to just look under the hood. No stone should be unturned. I don't even know what that means.
A Louisiana couple is accused of attempting to rob an Uber driver
under the hood
that the woman distracted by being topless.
With Jonathan Hood.
I got an engine underneath my hood.
Oh, it's a topless woman. Oh, I'm totally distracted now.
Weeknights on ESPN 1000.
What's up, and welcome in. You're listening to ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights at 7 here on ESPN 1000. Hope that you had a great Thursday. Hope you have a great Thursday night as we keep you company here until 10 o'clock. On the show tonight, we will keep you abreast of what's going on with the Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers. We have Jesse Rogers at Miller Park. So Cubs and Brewers, we'll hear from Jesse with some in-game reports at the bottoms of the hour. Also, we'll hear from Jim Margulis from Sox Machine, the podcast. Go to SoxMachine.com. We'll get Jim's thoughts about the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers, the home opener for the White Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field. So we'll talk to Jim about that. Scheduled to be at the bottom of the hour. We'll see what happens. This game's right now in the top of the 10th inning, and the Sox are down 9-7. So I think that'll be pretty much a good time to talk to Jim at the bottom of the hour, the way things are going. We'll hear from Nick Friedel, who covers the NBA for ESPN.com. He's got plenty of thoughts about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Tom Thibodeau, the former coach for the Bulls with the Timberwolves, that team is free-falling out of the playoffs. The number of teams in the West is falling out of the playoffs. We'll also talk about Kyrie Irving as well. We'll get to Kyrie here this half hour as well here on ESPN 1000. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. Also, we will hear from good old J.R. Jim Ross. For those of you that don't know, I host a podcast. It's the Under the Hood podcast. This is the Under the Hood radio show, but we have the UTH podcast that takes place anywhere you find your podcast. That's where you can find my show. I talked to Jim Ross. For those of you that missed it, we will replay some of Jim Ross's thoughts about WrestleMania, because that is this Sunday in New Orleans. So a little wrestling slash sports entertainment conversation at 9:35 right here on ESPN 1000. So if you know of a wrestling fan, or if you're one yourself, 9:35, if you missed it, Jim Ross, you'll hear some thoughts from him about WrestleMania coming to New Orleans, Louisiana. And that will be on Sunday. And we'll hear from Jim coming up at 9:35. So hope that you will settle in with us for the next 3 hours. We got plenty to discuss before we're done at 10 o'clock here on ESPN 1000. Came back last night after the Sox defeated the Blue Jays. Was here just for a little bit. Every show, including the radio show and the podcast, you can hear on Apple Music. You can hear that wherever you download your podcast. Just go there and subscribe to the Under the Hood show. A couple of things, because I was going to lead off with the White Sox, but they are not ready to be talked about yet, because they are trying to give this game away against the Detroit Tigers. So we'll get to the Sox in a little bit. I want to talk about something I normally don't discuss, especially in the A block of a show that I host. And the reason why I don't talk about this subject much is because clearly you guys don't want me to talk about hockey. Don't leave. I'm not going to break down the playoffs. Don't leave. As soon as I say hockey, all of a sudden, no, don't do that. I'm not talking about hockey. I'm talking about business of hockey. And that is the story that came across from Mark Lazarus. This is where I first saw it from Mark Lazarus. Joel Quenneville, Stan Bowman will return to Blackhawks next season. It was at the end of SportsCenter, we just heard just moments ago, that is newsworthy, that Joel Quenneville, Stan Bowman will return to Blackhawks next season. The reason why that I'm starting off with this tonight is because I find it to be a head scratcher that this is even a story tonight, meaning that the best team in the city as far as championships over the last 10 years is the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, I understand that this city can be a bandwagon city very quickly, right, Loyola Ramblers? It happens very quickly where a team starts to get good and all of a sudden, I was with them the whole time. I mean, I remember back in 70. No one cares about what you remember back in 70, whatever. The point is that there are five teams to follow, plus terrific college basketball or football to follow in this state or in the Chicagoland area. And the Blackhawks are the winningest team in the city because of three Stanley Cups. I remember when Dennis Savard a few years ago was fired by the Hawks. He still works in the organization as an ambassador. But growing up, Dennis Savard was my favorite Blackhawk because that team was destined for greatness, and they had goodness, but didn't have greatness. But Savard was my guy growing up as far as Blackhawks hockey is concerned. And so when he became the head coach, I said, oh, my goodness. My guy is the head coach for the Chicago Blackhawks. It's great. And then they were just kind of average. And then Joel Quenneville came into the Hawks fold as a quote-unquote scout. I'll take a look and see what's going on with the hockey club. I'll have the binocs on and take a look at what's going on with the hockey club. And all of a sudden, Joel Quenneville is the head coach of the Hawks. Just like that. From in the cheap seats with the binoculars as a scout to become the head coach. I say, oh, that's not right. You fired my guy. Why is this happening? Sagwa Fair is no longer the Hawks head coach. But then Joel Quenneville comes along. And then, just like the Cubs, just like what the White Sox are trying to do right now, they were able to build with young players. And all of a sudden, from just being a nobody in the city, not even discussed in the city, all of a sudden, home TV, all of a sudden, Full House at the United Center, all of a sudden, young, exciting players, all of a sudden, it's the place to be. It's the hottest club. And the Blackhawks win 1, 2, and 3 Stanley Cup championships. And a lot of that is because of Joel Quenneville and Stan Bowman. As soon as a Bowman entered Chicago, it was going to work for the Blackhawks. You kind of thought, hey, if someone has the last name of Bowman and they work for the Hawks, that's a positive, right? It's a win-win. I don't know because I'm not close to it. I don't know if it's true. But when people come to me and say that there's a disconnect between Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville, if that is the case, that has to be rectified. I'm not here to cast aspersions of saying that I know because I don't care enough to want to know like 100% if that's true or not. I don't pick up the phone for the Blackhawks multiple times to find out that story's right. But when people just leave stuff on my doorstep, I will talk to you about it. That's why this show is honest. I will always tell you like what I hear and just put it out there for you to consume. But when people say that there's a disconnect between the two, number one, I'm not surprised about that because with winning, there's always this ego thing of I'm the reason for the Cups. No, I'm the reason for the Cups. And you go back and forth and there's always this tug of war, but it doesn't have to be. Here's my point to all of this is that when I see that Stan Bowman and Joel Quenneville are going to return to the Blackhawks because John McDonough says so, John McDonough is a guy that I trust. And John McDonough is a person that I believe knows, especially from a marketing standpoint, what's best for the Blackhawks. Because he is one of the major reasons why they're on the map. Of course, it's the players. It's the inner workings of the organization. But all I am is a bottom line guy. The bottom line is that the Hawks have won 3 championships, the most championships in the last 10 years in this city, and they need to be celebrated for that. All I know is that I saw a hockey club go from 46-24, 52-22, 44-29, 45-26, 48-36. I saw a hockey club with 46-21, 48-28, 47-26, 50-23. I've seen how this team was able to grow. obviously, with them not being in the playoffs, there are question marks. There are questions like, how in the world is this Brent Seabrook contract taking place? Who's going to pay for this contract because he's making way too much money? You know what? To me, when I think about Kane and Taves and how they've been able to capture the imagination of hockey fans, I won't say Chicago because that would be a lie. They're not capturing the attention of the entire city. But for hockey fans and those that want to jump on this bandwagon, you know those names. They're synonymous with greatness in the city over the last 10 years. And so for Quenneville and Bowman to be questioned on whether or not they should be with the organization or not, I think it's ridiculous. What are we doing here? What are we doing? For a city that is starving for championships, right? And this team wins 3 Stanley Cups, and then there's questions at the end of the season. I didn't make the playoffs. Someone's got to get fired. Why are we in this society, this sports society, in which you just have to fire someone because you got to let somebody go? You don't have to do that, especially when you have skins on the wall, right? The idea that if the Cubs don't win the World Series this year, Joe Madden's question. No, there's a World Series championship, something that I never thought we'd see in our lifetime. No, there is no question about Joe Madden, whether you like him as a manager or not. The guy should be in place as a manager for the Cubs. So I don't believe in trying to fire someone after winning 3 championships and thinking that he's the problem. Joe Quenneville, for me, can have this job as long as he wants it. Stan Bowman, or anybody named Bowman, a cousin, an aunt, a cousin, a little baby, whoever his name is Bowman that enters the United Center or in the offices for the Blackhawks, they can be in the organization as long as possible. You know why? Because the Bowmans are hockey royalty. So I'm not breaking down the team because I'm trying to keep listeners. But what I will do is tell you that I don't believe in this whole feeling that because the team underachieves for a year, that, there's trouble. You know what they need to do? Just on the surface. You know what you do? You hit the reset button. And you build around Taves and Kane. And you try to figure out how to dig out of some questionable contracts. I remember doing crosstalk with Carmen and Yurko. I guess it was just those two. And the Blackhawks came up as a conversation piece. And they were talking about the Brent Seabrook deal, like somebody's got to pay for it. Well, here's the thing. When Dale Tallon was the general manager, there were some question marks about the salaries and what was going on with that Blackhawks team at the time. They had to dig out of some of the questionable moves from Dale Tallon. And guess what? 3 Stanley Cups later. So all I know is that there's championships and there's celebrations at Grant Park and there's radio remotes and people are into the Blackhawks when they win. I would love for the Hawks to be more of a story so we could talk about them after every game, but you guys don't want that, so we don't do it. It's unfortunate because my friends on the East Coast that do what I do for a living in Philadelphia, in Boston, in Pittsburgh, in New York, they're like, hey, so what's going on with the Hawks? I go, well, I'm watching the games, but the audience doesn't care about it as much. Our ratings went down when the Hawks were on their Stanley Cup run. And I know that the 7th floor doesn't want me to say that, but that's exactly what happened.
Oops, I'm breaking the fourth wall.
Wasn't a big enough story because not enough people were on the bandwagon. There should be more conversation about it, but I opened the show tonight to say stop trying to fire a championship coach and a championship general manager. Stop doing that. And the same thing with Theo and Jed and the Cubs. If they don't make it this year, which I'm not sure that they will, but the point is that they're in the stratosphere. They're in the mix. Everyone talks about the Cubs nationally. Everybody believes that this team has a chance. And so they are in a championship window right now. So this whole thing where Madden is going to be questioned and it's going to happen, it's not fair. It's just not fair. You want to question somebody, start going after Garn Pax even harder if this team can't turn around the next 2 or 3 years. That's the focus for me as we talk to you here on the Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Let me get to something else here. So the big story of today is Kyrie Irving is out for the season for the Boston Celtics. And you say, well, how does that relate to what the Bulls are doing? Well, here's how it relates. The Celtics and the Bulls are both in the Eastern Conference, right? So there. So Eric gave me this list from Law Murray, if that's really your name, from ESPN.com. Tracking the key injuries in NBA postseason race. And DeMar DeRozan, the timetable is none. He missed a win against Orlando. It's very low, but DeRozan should be in the mix when they go to the playoffs as the Sox lose 9-7 over at Guaranteed Rate for their home opener. We'll talk to Jim Margulis about the White Sox coming up at the bottom of the hour right here on ESPN 1000. Okay, so this ball game's come to an end, Darren. Anything else? God, Ed and DJ are so bad. Anyway, I heard them last night. It's like, oh, no. This ball game's come to an end. Sox lose 9-7. Anything else, Darren? Nope. For Darren Jackson, it's Ed Farmer. Sox lose 9-7. Post-game show coming up on the White Sox Radio Network. Yeah. Anyway, let me get back on track. Yes, the injuries. So DeMar DeRozan is fine with the Toronto Raptors, right? George Hill, Kyle Korver questions about their injuries there with Cleveland, Joel Embiid and Dario Saric from the 76ers, John Wall with the Wizards, and Trevor Booker with the Pacers, Deion Waiters with the Miami Heat, Malcolm Brogdon, Thon Maker, Dellavedova from Milwaukee. So there's some injury situations in the East, but none greater than the story we found out earlier today with Kyrie Irving and the Boston Celtics. Of course, you know the Gordon Hayward story because of how horrific that injury was in opening night. It just took the steam out of the whole organization for the Celtics. But here's the thing about Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is trying to come across to us as like this Kobe 2.0, not necessarily in play, but as far as temperament. They're both very good friends. Anytime that Kyrie does something special, he gets a text or call from Kobe. So they're very close in that. It's almost like Kyrie is sipping from the chalice of Kobe Bryant of the Mamba, which fine. I mean, if you want to model your temperament and your game after someone, if it's Kobe Bryant, cool, right? Absolutely. One of the greatest players I've ever seen play. Definitely top 20. But, you know, Kyrie Irving had a choice. At the end of the season, there was talk that Kyrie's knee was not great and that Kyrie really needed to have surgery at the end of last season. However, if he has a surgery, we don't see the upcoming Uncle Drew movie coming up this summer, because Uncle Drew, for those that don't know, he puts on this Grady mask and he puts on like black and white hair and he's like this old man that is coming across as like this old timer that's trying to turn the clock back as a modern basketball player. It's a kind of interesting story. It was actually a commercial turned into a movie. So it's fine. I think that Kyrie Irving, what was best for him is to have that surgery at the end of the season. So if you had this feeling in the offseason, like, you know what? Screw LeBron. I'm done with this. I don't want to work with Cleveland anymore. I don't want to deal with LeBron James. I want my own joint. I want to be my own man. I'm out. I'm done with this. Now, obviously, that is a surprise, right? It's a surprise to everybody. Like, why would Kyrie leave Cleveland? Because he's tired of dealing with the Cavaliers and LeBron James. There's a whole story that we've discussed before about how this was Kyrie's team. LeBron just comes out of nowhere, says, I'm coming home. And Kyrie's like, well, I thought this was my team. Now it becomes LeBron's team. Now you win a championship. And so now Kyrie feels like he's Robin to LeBron's Batman, all this stuff, right? Blah, blah, blah. Drama, drama, drama. Cool. So if you felt like you were going to go someplace else, and you felt, I need to have a trade, or I just need to get better in the offseason, don't you have that surgery, the surgery that you needed last year? Don't you have that surgery? He thought he could just play through the season in pain, and he could not do that. And he has now retarded the progress of the Celtics to try to win the East. Now, obviously, it's very difficult to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers 4 games out of 7. Because of LeBron James. However, because the team, the Cavs, are not necessarily a good team yet. It's not a good team yet. As a matter of fact, LeBron James had to play with two different teams. He had to play with the bums that I didn't think were any good anyway, talking about Derrick Rose and Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder. That whole mix wasn't good. That's why I chose the Celtics to start the season. Because I said, this team's not going to be any good for LeBron. The end comes now. But then, and it also comes to find out this, and I still agree with this, LeBron is struggling without Kyrie Irving because LeBron's not going to play every game. Because without LeBron on the floor, that team is just, what? I mean, Orlando? I'm just saying. I mean, it's just not good. I might be a little hyperbole in that, but you understand the point that LeBron carries the team, right? So my bigger point to this is Kyrie Irving, if he has surgery and he's 100% healthy, now who knows what happens during the regular season? Maybe he gets hurt again. But if he has surgery and he's 100%, who's to say that Boston doesn't win the East? With Kyrie feeling, man, I just want to get past LeBron to prove everybody that I am the guy, that I was the guy all along, that you guys didn't even make me first team, second team, third team. You didn't help me out. You know, I'm a guy that is a superstar, but I was overshadowed by LeBron James. But he chose the movie. He chose doing that movie over having the surgery. It's kind of selfish. It's kind of actually a lot of selfish because the Celtics maybe would have had a chance. It probably takes away a great Eastern Conference final. Maybe we could have saw Boston against Cleveland with a healthy Kyrie. I mean, no Hayward, but the point is that it's Kyrie versus LeBron and Kyrie at full strength with the surgery. And maybe, who knows, maybe that's the game. Maybe that's the series that LeBron falls short. But we'll never know that now because now he's out for the season. And we have all these other injuries in the East. So having said all that, it just seems to me by default you are looking at LeBron James because I'm not a Toronto fan. I don't believe that that is real. They have to prove it to me. They have to really prove it to me to say that they're going to win the East, and I don't believe in them. So it's almost like we're going to see Cleveland again in the East, but Kyrie took that away from me and took it away from a lot of fans. A healthy Kyrie with the Boston Celtics against this up-and-coming, trying-to-figure-out Cavs team would have been very interesting. But now we don't get that. Now we probably get the Cavs and the Toronto Raptors, who's been knocking on the door, trying to break through. And you know what's going to happen? They'll be the bridesmaid again. That's what's going to happen. I'll catch the bouquet. You drop the bouquet again. And that's exactly what's going to happen because they're the Toronto Raptors. There it is. So the Sox lose. They lose against the Tigers. We'll hear from Jim Margulis coming up at the bottom of the hour. Also, we'll get a Cubs report because the Cubs are taking on Milwaukee. Man, Cubs got a nice schedule here, taking on the Brewers. Don't have to worry about any weather because the dome is closed. We got Jesse coming up next.
Coming up, Jesse Rogers with the latest on the Cubs with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Glad you're with us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Jonathan Hood with you. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com, tweet Jay Hood. Also on Instagram, IG Jay Hood. It's the Cubs and the Brewers at Miller Park. And to tell us about it, here's Jesse Rogers. Jess?
All right, Jay Hood, top of the second, no score, but the Cubs are threatening second and third with one out. Javi Baez at the plate, kind of a strange ending to the first inning. John Lester got the first two batters out, but then walked Ryan Braun. Braun immediately took off for second base before even Lester pitched the ball, caught the Cubs off guard. He ends up at second easily, and then he does it again, trying to take third base on the same play, but this time Lester bounced the throw into Brian and gets Braun to end the inning. And you hear the cheering in the background as Javi Baez comes through a base hit up the middle. So three singles in this inning. The Cubs are on the board with two runs in the top of the second. So we'll see if Lester shut down the run game with that play. The Cubs take the lead here in the second. 2-0. Back to you, Jay Hood.
All right, Jesse, thank you. As you're listening to ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Na, 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 na. Hey, hey, hey. White Sox fall short 9-7. If you're leaving Guaranteed Rate Field, you had a chance to watch or listen to the game. Open phone lines for you, the White Sox fan, 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is our phone number. If you want someone to give it to you honestly about the White Sox, their loss 9-7, call quickly, especially if you're in the car. Want to talk about this White Sox loss 9-7? Jump in. 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. All of our guests, they are on the Studio Hot Rods Hotline. Jim Margulis covers the White Sox like a blanket for Sox Machine. Go to the Sox Machine podcast, a terrific podcast. 5 days a week, they're cranking out great information about this White Sox team for 2018. And Jim joins us here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000. Jim, Jonathan Hood, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. And I thought we're going to be talking about a whole different game about an hour ago.
Who are you telling? Are you kidding me? Okay, before we dive in, Jim, when can I be mad at this team? I was not happy about, I was happy that the Sox won yesterday, but there's five or six things on my yellow pad that I didn't like about the Sox win yesterday. Some things that they could have done better, and they end up winning the ball game. Here in this situation, that's a game that should have been won, and I classified, as Josh Nelson classifies it, that's just a bad loss today.
Yeah, sure is, especially home opener. They've lost three in a row, and the last three home openers were all just kind of sad, slow, quiet games that just kind of deflated the entire crowd, you know, over the course of a couple hours. And this time, you know, fans, you know, the fans that showed up and stayed through snowflakes and, you know, 33-degree weather and wind and everything like that, they were hanging in there and, you know, deserved to see better. And so it's just one of these years. The White Sox don't really get those kind of huge crowds, and that, oftentimes it seems when they do, they just find a different way to disappoint them every time.
Oh, it's just so disappointing. Okay, how in the world is Soria going to get traded if he blows this first true save opportunity here? How does that happen? He's got to pitch well enough for him to be let go or traded to sometime in July. That was just a horrible performance today.
Yeah, it was pretty ugly. You know, Larry Garcia didn't help in left field by turning a, what should have been a single, putting runners on first and second. Kind of got caught in between. He looked like he was going to try to take an angle to catch it, realized he couldn't, didn't have the angle to block it, got past him. You know, that turns into the tying run when there was still a runner on second and Soria could still get out of it. So that didn't help. But, you know, I would chalk it up maybe to one, you know, having kind of a thin back end of the bullpen. I think, you know, Renteria is still trying to find guys he can trust. You know, he's going to Nate Jones for the first time back-to-back days, and Jones only pitched once on back-to-back days last year before his elbow flared up on him. So I was watching that to see how he responded there, and you know, he looked more touchable this time around. Soria comes in first time on back-to-back days. He doesn't look as sharp. So, you know, perhaps it's part of the you know, knocking off the rust, getting into the full, you know, I guess the full speed of the season, but then again, when it's 32 degrees and wind's blowing in and, you know, the bottom of the order hits a homer off them, you know, it's a bit harder to excuse.
Jim Margulis from Sox Machine. Again, go to the podcast. 5 days a week, they're giving great White Sox information. He joins me in our Sox post-post show here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. What do you think of James Shields as a starter for the Sox?
Well, my bold prediction on the podcast this year, yeah, everybody gives one. My bold prediction was that fans would find a way to warm up to him a little bit. Not a lot, but I said the same thing about Avi last year, that Avi, you know, being a, you know, a watchable hitter on a team that might not have much watchable offense, that fans would find a way to warm up to him. He had a big season, so I tried to give Shields that same kind of boost. And, you know, so far I think he's basically given what I would consider like post-surgery John Danks. You know, not thrilling to watch, doesn't miss a lot of bats, but will go five or six innings and not pitch terribly, and he'll, you know, keep things in order. And by that I mean, you know, it's a starter you don't have to replace in April and May, and you don't have to worry about going into, you know, whether it's calling up a guy like Michael Kopech or, you know, Alec Hansen's hurt now, but, you know, Spencer Adams, you know, if he's ready, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, going too early to guys like those or having to call up guys like Chris Volstad and TJ House, who are, you know, more, you know, Triple-A depth organizational players. So he kind of keeps everything in order and keeps the games, you know, turns over the rotation, keeps it watchable, provides some veteran mentorship, and, you know, I think one strikeout through two starts is, you know, is not sustainable when it comes to success. But early in the season, I think he just has to get to June, basically, and then, you know, whether it's he pitches well enough to get traded to a team that just needs an arm, or he pitches poorly, the wheels come off, and he gets DFA'd. You know, either way, I think he just needs to get into mid-June so that depth can kind of rise to the system naturally.
Jim, McConnell goes 0 for 6 with 4 strikeouts. That's a tough day at the office. I mean, that's just that's a brutal day. So he stays at the top of the order probably for the rest of the season for him to work out the kinks, right? Because I'm not sure where else he could give you the kind of pop or the production that you're looking for in the lineup.
Yeah, I think so. You know, part of it's when you look at the White Sox order, the bottom of the order has been performing pretty well with Sanchez and Anderson and Engel. And on one hand, that's very good because those are three young players the White Sox can use going forward. On the other hand, I think it somewhat undermines the idea of Moncada batting leadoff because, you know, when Engel bat 166 last year and he's the ninth hitter, you think, well, you know, he's not, you know, Moncada's going to come to the plate with the bases empty. So his strikeouts aren't going to hurt. His walks might start something. In this case, you know, he strikes out two guys on, you know, to end the game and, you know, the last of his four strikeouts. And, you know, that's when I think the frustration starts to mount. So I think when it comes to the White Sox lineup and I guess how Moncada fits, I think, you know, there might be, especially against lefties, if he continues to struggle against lefties because his right-handed swing is his weaker swing, I think then Renteria might have to, you know, break the mold a little bit and maybe shift him down the order to 7th, 8th, 9th and keep him up top against, you know, righties if his swing looks better there. You know, I don't think it's set in stone just because I think as the season goes along, say if, you know, Sanchez looks still like a decent bat, if Leury is still, you know, getting on base and running well, I think there are options to take up some starts against left-handed pitching at the top of the order.
Garcia's got to get in front of that ball late in the game, doesn't he? I mean, yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, he's a little guy. Just trap it, yeah. Jim.
Yeah, especially you know, he's the guy you look at as the defensive replacement for Delmonico. So, you know, that's going to take a few games to shake that off. I mean, he made a great catch. You know, on the other hand, you know, I guess you go back a day and he saved Nate Jones with a great leaping catch against the wall. So, you see, I guess, the both ends of the spectrum one day to the other. And I think that team, you know, being as young as it is, being that the pitching staff is thinner than it was last year, especially in the bullpen, there could be games like that where you think they have it figured out and you think you see some sustainability in how to win. And then, you know, they make the kind of mistakes, the mental lapses, the inexperience, and it just kind of shows in a very frustrating fashion.
How about this, Jim? I'm going to ask you this now. I'm going to ask you also throughout the season when I have you on the show. Can you identify what Rick Renteria baseball is? Like, what is his book, tendencies that you see?
Well, I think right now he's been more hands-off, I think, this year with bunts and such and sacrificing and you're trying to hit runners over. I think he's been more hands-off. I think he's letting Tim Anderson loose a little bit. I think, you know, when I was thinking about, you know, this radio appearance and when the White Sox had a four-run lead, I thought we'd be talking about Tim Anderson, right, you know, changing the games with the way he's running the bases and stealing bases, you know, scoring runs by himself. And, you know, that's fun. I like to see him, you know, and I think Rick Renteria, you know, ideally he's playing a more aggressive game in the base paths and Anderson plays into that. But I think he's still figuring out his bullpen right now. And I think the difference between him and Robin Ventura year over year was that Renteria didn't mind cutting starts short. You know, he didn't like running a starter out there until he was exhausted or until, you know, the lineup really caught up to him. And I think last year with the bullpen he had with Robertson and Canely and Swarzak, you know, doing what they did, made it very easy to make Renteria look smart. And I think, you know, it could go the other way this year where, you know, if he has to go to Manaea or Infante, if Jones is unavailable or if Jones has an off night, he's down to just maybe a couple veteran options who are maybe, you know, not peak relievers. And so, you know, there could be ugly games and you could see the Ricky's boys don't quit. You know, I guess going to the second game in Toronto where, you know, they just run out of counter punches. The Blue Jays run away with it with a 7-run inning. And, you know, I think that's kind of the, you know, we could see those games where, you know, the bullpen just runs out of arms and they just have to struggle to get through 27 or 24 outs if they're on the road. And, you know, they just look defeated at times.
Did you watch the game on television, on the app?
Yes. Well, I had a drive home, so I missed about an inning and a half on the drive home.
I was just asking because I was wondering how well did you track the innings that Hawk had to do and Jason Benetti? That was an odd booth today. And, of course, it had to be a little bit, you know, it's probably a little bit awkward for Benetti because, yes, I mean, he looks up to Hawk. he's going to be the primary play-by-play guy moving forward. But then, like, Hawk's doing, like, a half inning or two, and then here comes Benetti. So they went back and forth. They were able to weave it in and out pretty well. But at times, it had three-man booth. Sometimes it was two. It was very interesting.
Yeah, it sounded, yeah, I guess, you know, maybe if they thought about it a year or two before, maybe it would have been a way to extend Hawk's life a little bit when it comes to absorbing these losses. I think, one of the biggest contributors to Hawk retiring and just when it comes to his, style as a broadcaster, he really took these losses hard, and I think it accumulated on him. And, you know, there was a lot of silence in the booth. And I think Benetti, being there as the third guy, helped keep Stone involved in the broadcast. Even if it was a Hawk inning and Benetti was, basically just sitting backseat and not saying much, he would still have a way to, inject a comment that would get Stone going or, needle him a little bit and get the banter back and forth. And I think, maybe if they had a third voice that maybe was maybe newer to Hawk or maybe, didn't inherit the same kind of baggage, I guess, that Hawk and Stone accumulated, maybe it would have made the broadcast smoother. But, given that it's the first time they've ever done it, it didn't sound bad.
No, it was fine. It's just good to, it's get the old school thoughts from Hawk, which I'm going to miss, after this season. And then you've got Benetti with the new school thoughts and the stats. And I just think that it made for an interesting broadcast today. So I look forward to seeing what the future will be. So last thing, and I appreciate your time, Jim. So I know it's just April 5th. Can you identify the guys in the bullpen that you trust right now for the Sox? Because you mentioned Nate Jones, back-to-back games. Farquhar looks good the last couple of games here. Can you identify anyone else that you may really like out of this bullpen?
Yeah, I think if you're putting it in order, I would go with Jones, Avalon against lefties. Mm-hmm. Soria, I'll give him a bad game. I'll let him come back, but, I'll put Soria third, Farquhar fourth, and then, Manaea looked shaky. Infante, I think, might be the first guy bumped down because he looks like he's off. He was missing a few miles per hour his first time out, and then the last two times out have been missing the strike zone pretty badly. So, I think he might be the first guy shuttled down. Haven't seen much from Hector Santiago. I think he kind of hangs, he's kind of out of mind a little bit just because they have guys who might go short in starts, and Renteria might want to use them for, two or three innings at a time. But in a game like this, it might be the case where Santiago might have to come in and, be that, I guess more credible reliever than Infante is. And maybe that'll come as starters start to, gain Renteria's trust by going 5, 6, 7 innings on a regular basis.
Check out the Sox Machine podcast. They do a terrific job bringing in the White Sox 5 days a week. And Jim, as always, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. And hopefully next one won't be so big a bummer.
I know. Exactly. So Jim Margulis with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. And that's another guy I don't like on this team, Bummer. They bring him in yesterday. Lefties, rag arm. What are they doing? So 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our telephone number as we talk to you about the Chicago White Sox and their loss against the Tigers by a score of 9-7. What's interesting about this is that that this is a rebuilding situation. You know what is going on with this ball club right now, especially when when you see Moncada going 0-for-6 and Abreu going 0-for-5. It's like, you know what the season is, but it still stings. Doesn't it? It's just like, because you don't want to see the Sox beat themselves, right? It's one thing, you're going to get beat down. You're going to lose 90 ball games this year, plus. But you don't want to see games in which, man, you had it in the mix because Zimmerman had nothing today, the starter for the Tigers. And he gave up 6 runs and you lose 9-7. That's tough. And for those of you driving home from Guaranteed Rate, you know how difficult that is. Opening, the opener for the White Sox on the South Side and they lose in 10, 9-7. The Masters Leaderboards updates are brought to you by Franciscan Wines, Golf Center of Des Plaines, and PGA Tour Superstore. Let's go to Westwood One with the latest on the Masters.
From the Augusta National Golf Club, Westwood One Sports presents this special report on the Masters. I'm Ted Emmerich. Matt Kuchar picked up almost right where he left off here a year ago. Kuchar shot a final round 67 to pull into a tie for fourth. This year...
Time to get busy.
Like we always do about this time.
Jonathan Hood.
Outside!
On ESPN 1000, Tariq Cohen.
You can post up dialogue, can't you?
Oh, yeah, I dunk on him.
Right.
I was
going to
say.
Duncan.
Curtis Conway.
Oh, when did we get this piano? Oh, when did we get this? It's just like, honey, we moved in here with this piano.
You sound just like him, man.
Monique.
I like Sydney. Is he cool?
He is.
I know you do. I'm just asking, is he?
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
No, you know. I don't. But I don't want to know him like that.
Weeknights on ESPN 1000.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on a Thursday night here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Hit me up on Instagram, IGJ Hood, on Snapchat, SnapJ Hood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back guaranteed. We're going to hear from Nick Friedell coming up in 3 minutes here on ESPN 1000. Nick Friedell covers the NBA for ESPN.com. He has not been on the station in a while. Oh, that's right, because I was on vacation. That's the last time we heard from Nick on the station. So we got to get his NBA information coming up in a few moments here on ESPN 1000. Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. That comes up at 8:35. Also, we'll hear from Jesse for the update on the Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers up there at Cubs, Wisconsin. Like, they should just have a city called, like, Cubby, Wisconsin. I'll tell you this.
And it's got to be, like, over the top, too. It can't be, like, Wrigley. It's got to be, like, Cubby or Cubby Bear, Wisconsin or something
Cubby
like that.
Cubby Bear, Wisconsin. It might as well be. And here's why. Like, I enjoy Miller Park, and if I want to go watch a Cubs game, I'm going to watch it in Miller Park more times than not because it's easier for me to get there from the south side. But anyway, it's interesting that our sister station, ESPN Milwaukee, has this topic every time the Cubs come into town. Hey, are you guys going to buy the tickets? Your guys are going to buy the tickets? And they have this topic on ESPN Milwaukee with, like, was it Steve Homer True and Dan Needles and all those shows up there. And they're always, this is always a topic, right? SSPN Milwaukee, the same thing, because we talked to Bill Michaels a lot on this show. And the topic is, are you going to the game? Don't let Cubs fans take over Miller Park. And it happens every year. It happens every year. Milwaukee Brewers fans are not invested like Cub fans are. Yeah, Cub fans are in Milwaukee or in the surrounding, you know, Milwaukee and Kenosha area. And they make the drive from Chicago to get up there because it's a great time. The food's great. The beer's even better. And it's, you get more Cub fans in that stadium than you can at Wrigley Field. So, of course, you're going to go up there. But Brewers fans are just not invested. If they were invested, you'd see more Brewers fans, and it would be harder for a Cub fan to get a ticket. But look, if Cub fans have the wherewithal to be able to go up there and have a good time, and Brewers fans sit back in the cut and just like, I don't know if the team can contend. But if that's the case, then don't worry about it. As long as the ballpark's full, right? Brewers fans always have this complaint. Like, there is no complaint, man. Like, you don't support the team, the Cub fans do. Now, next story, right? Before we hear from Nick Friedell, I was talking to Brian Windhorst because I do a national show along with this show. I do a national show with Jeff Dickerson. We're on Saturday nights from 7 to 11 p.m. and we're on Sundays from 3 to 7 in the afternoon, 3 to 6 in the afternoon. And both of those shows are also heard here on ESPN 1000. But we're talking to you, but also talking to the nation all over the world on the ESPN app, or for Dickerson and Hood. And Windhorst came on. I don't have the soundbite in front of me. I asked for the soundbite, and I never got it. But I'll relate to you what was said. Brian Windhorst said that, as someone who covers the NBA all over the country, he says he's never seen more sadness in the NBA, more stress in the NBA than he has this year, in that Golden State Warriors trying to figure out if they can win a championship. Of course, you know what happened with Steve Kerr as a head coach for the Golden State Warriors. Back issues, but also stress. Ty Lue is back with the Cavaliers back on the bench, but he missed 9 games because he woke up with nosebleeds. Woke up with stress to the point where he could not travel. Steve Clifford, the coach for the Charlotte Hornets, same thing, had to leave because of stress. Players, Kevin Love talked about this on the record, talking about the mental fatigue and mental stress that's out there for some players, because we're men and we never talk about our issues. We never talk about our issues. We always keep it suppressed. We don't complain to everybody. If we have a pain, more times than not, more guys that I know won't say that they have a pain or if they're going through issues. But players are going through it, and they're more open with it now, and coaches are missing time because of the stress that comes along with the job. Yes, they make millions of dollars. Yes, they have generational wealth, but that's not the end-all, be-all when it comes to happiness. So I want to talk to Nick about that, among other things, as we go to the Studio Hot Rods Hotline. And we hit it up with the man who covers the NBA like a blanket. It is Nick Friedell. And Nick joins us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Don't forget, you can find Nick's columns on ESPN.com. Hello, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, my man. It's always good to be with you, and it's good to be in Chicago for a couple days.
Absolutely. And so as we talk, if we're talking about you being in Chicago, me being in Chicago, let's talk about Kyrie Irving. So the latest on Kyrie Irving is that he will not play for the rest of the year. What was your initial reaction to the story?
My initial reaction was, whoa, and then followed by a couple expletives, because I was surprised that it got to that point. But Hoodie, having been around the Celtics a few times, even the last couple weeks, man, you know, Kyrie never really looked the same. He never really sounded the same while talking about that injury. So while it is a game changer for the playoffs and how everything's going to unfold in the East, I think the Celtics knew for a while that this thing wasn't really good, and then the news hits today, and you kind of go, uh-oh. So I feel bad in the sense that the Celtics have dumped everything they can into this season, and you take Kyrie out there. I mean, there's no way they're going to the finals now. There's no way they're going to make a deep run. But you've got to hope for the best for the future, and if you're Kyrie, if you're the organization, you just got to hope that he comes back in a much better place going into next season.
You've seen both Milwaukee and Philadelphia play, and I wondering from you, based on what you've seen, Nick, how close is Milwaukee to where the 76ers are? The reason why I ask that question is because many are trying to kind of push the Sixers into a different stratosphere in the East, believing that maybe they're way so early that they could be a contender, meaning a top three team for the next few years. So how close is Milwaukee to Philadelphia from a roster standpoint?
Yeah, Hoodie, I don't think they're really that close at all. But I say that as somebody who not only has not been buying Milwaukee throughout the year, I have been buying Philly. I see these columns, and I listen to the interviews that have popped out the last couple of weeks, and I hear these people all around the league saying, you know, Philly can be a sleeper team. Philly can be that team that can really make some noise. You get Embiid back, and if he's healthy and ready to go after his injury, then that team can be scary. And I've watched them a lot off and on throughout the season. I'm not buying that. I'm just not buying it. I don't think they're going to suddenly go from a team that was a mess the last few years and was tanking away to, all right, everything's good to go, and this is a group that's going to get, potentially to the conference finals or beyond. I mean, I've seen some really optimistic predictions with Philly being able to get, all the way in there, depending on what else happens here, especially with LeBron. So with Milwaukee, I look at it as Giannis is incredible. Chris Middleton is a nice piece, and I just don't like the composition of the rest of that roster. I mean, Jabari Parker's finding his way. Eric Bledsoe, it reminds me of my high school coach always saying, you're dribbling the ball so much, you're giving it a headache. I mean, he doesn't like to pass much sometimes. And the rest of that roster with those contracts, like our man Tony Snell, former Bull, mm-hmm. Dellavedova, I know Malcolm Brogdon, they're hoping that he can give him a little lift here at some point. But Hoodie, I've watched them a ton this season. I don't like what I've seen, not only for the rest of this year, but into the future. I think John Horst, the GM, and their ownership, they've got to make some major shakeups. And the first part, of course, is who's going to be the coach when next season rolls around.
Nick Friedel covers the NBA for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Brian Windhorst was on the Dickerson Hood, our national show that we do, Nick. And he was talking about Ty Lue. We find out that Ty Lue, after missing 9-10 games, is now back on the bench for the Cavs. But he talked about the stress level that he sees as he goes around the league. And he said that to us, which came out of the blue, he says that, "I've never seen the stress and the sadness level as far as teams that are successful in the NBA." He sees it with Golden State, sees it with Cleveland. He just talks about, even though you see all these wins, you know that they have generational wealth, it's just that there is just so much on a lot of these coaches, like a Steve Kerr having to miss time and everything else. Is that something that you've witnessed going across the country, that the type of stress level from teams that are successful?
Yes. Stress level-wise, absolutely, Hoodie. On a day-to-day basis, I think the stress within the game for coaches, for players, for front office executives, it's deeper and it's stronger than I've ever seen it. Why is that? Well, you know, you can point to social media and you can point to the round-the-clock coverage now of the league seemingly every day of the year. There used to be times where the NBA just kind of disappeared, certainly in the summer. That's not the case anymore. Everybody always wants to know what's going on, and there is a pressure, and there always has been, but it's even more scrutinized now, to win all the time. You got to win. And just for context of this conversation, you know, there's still so many people within this city here in Chicago that have an affinity for Tom Thibodeau. One of the only times I can recall in all the years I've covered Tibbs where he kind of took pause and took some time to collect himself was a few months ago when a reporter asked him about Steve Clifford, the Hornets coach, who, of course, had to step away because he was dealing with a variety of health issues related to he wasn't really sleeping much because he was working so hard to get his game plans ready and the stress of the job. And Tibbs, it still strikes me, Hoodie, because that's one of Tibbs' closest friends in the league. And, you know, the question was not only about Clifford, but how do you deal with the stress of this job, basically? And Tom stopped for a second and was kind of like, yeah, it's what you always worry about. So I think it is on these coaches' minds all the time. I don't think anybody has figured out the perfect balance on how to handle the stress and all the different things, the obligations that come with being a head coach in the NBA. Now, having said that, people are going to listen to our conversation and say, okay, well, you know, these coaches are making millions of dollars. They got to figure out a way to deal with it. I understand that part from the average fan. I'm just saying that the scrutiny involved in that job is to the highest level that I can recall since I've been covering the league now, about 10 years. So it's been interesting to see how it's affecting everybody. And it's certainly something that we're going to hear a lot more about, because I think that the way coaches are hired and fired and the pressure to win and lose is that strong, it's not a storyline that's going to disappear anytime soon.
When we take a look at coaches, because we're starting to get to the nitty-gritty to the end of the regular season, we see that once again Detroit is not in the playoff mix. They are eliminated from the playoff situation in the top eight in the East. And Steve Clifford's name is going to come back out there again with Charlotte. Do you expect those two to be the first two that might be let go at season's end?
Yeah, sadly. And on a personal level, Hoodie, I've enjoyed talking to those guys, Stan Van Gundy and Steve Clifford, over the last few years here. A couple quick notes. I mean, when the Pistons made that Blake Griffin move, having seen how weak the back end of the East is, I was convinced that team was going to go to at least the playoffs. I mean, they got on a little roll there immediately after. They just could never find their rhythm, and in large part, and in hindsight, they couldn't find their rhythm because Reggie Jackson was out for months. I mean, that injury just crushed them. They did not have the point guard depth and the guard depth that they needed. So I still think if the Pistons can stay healthy moving forward, and with the core of Drummond and Griffin and Reggie Jackson, that's a playoff team to me. But can those guys stay healthy? You know, who knows? And Stan, in making that move, giving up a first-round pick this year and taking on all that money on the Griffin contract, I mean, that's a fireable offense in and of itself, on top of the fact that they have not had a lot of success during his tenure. As for the Hornets, the other night they played here in Chicago, they played the Bulls. Hoodie, that was an embarrassing performance by Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Embarrassing. I mean, they're running out Dwight Howard and Nicholas Batum, and Monk's getting some run, and Kemba Walker, and they found a way to lose to Ryan Arcidiacono and, you know, Sean Kilpatrick, and you know, all these guys that may not be in the league next season. I mean, that was a really bad showing by the Hornets, and, you know, we mentioned Clifford a couple times. Never in my 9 years being here within the city and going to all these games at the United Center have I ever seen a coach take care of his post-game responsibilities with, I guess, his team and the media, and then walk out of the arena. I mean, there's usually a couple minutes in between when writers and reporters are getting their belongings from courtside and walking back into the media room. I'm walking back towards the media room the other night, and Steve Clifford is, like, walking by me. Whatever he said to his team could not have taken more than 20, 30 seconds. I think he's just disgusted at what's happened. He's been around the league long enough to know the writing's on the wall. But for such a proud guy and such a solid coach who's well-liked throughout the league, to see that scene play out was just kind of jarring. Like, what? This guy's leaving right now? I mean, people hadn't even, like, fans hadn't even walked out of the arena, and here comes Steve Clifford with his bag, with his head down, getting out as fast as he can.
Wow, that's something. As far as Minnesota is concerned, they are in a really slippery slope here in the Western Conference, and I know it's been kind of fluid, especially, you know, 5-8, 5-9, especially with the Nuggets trying to get themselves in the playoff mix. How well do you look at this Western Conference and think maybe Minnesota won't have a chance to be in the playoffs based on how they played?
Yeah, and Hoodie, that is incredible that we're sitting here having that conversation. Because with Jimmy Butler, and look, I have not been a fan of what I've been seeing from the Timberwolves this season, but I always believed they'd get to the playoffs. But you take Jimmy out of that lineup, and you're relying now, if you're Tibbs and you're that Timberwolves front office, on Andrew Wiggins, who you just signed to a $140 million-plus deal before the season started, and Karl Anthony Towns, who's about to get paid as well at some point this summer. Those guys have not lived up to the hype. I mean, that roster, and Bulls fans know full well, Tibbs only trusts a small amount of guys every year. And I think that he is just terrified of having to trust those guys without Jimmy. And I know there's talk potentially that Jimmy comes back here at some point in the very near future. They need him, but you can't expect Jimmy Butler to go play 40 minutes off a meniscus fix, surgery-wise. So the Timberwolves better show up, and specifically Towns and Wiggins better show up. They better show up tonight against the Nuggets. They got a tough back-to-back tomorrow night at Staples against the Lakers. And then they've got two home games against the Grizzlies and the Nuggets again in Minnesota. If they were to miss the playoffs, I mean, that fan base is already pretty angry at everything that's occurred because, Hoodie, Tibbs was brought in to fix the defense. Their defense is atrocious. I mean, their defense has been bad all year, and that was with Jimmy Butler. So if they somehow miss the playoffs, oh, man, on top of the fact that Tibbs has, like, $24 million left on his deal that Glenn Taylor signed him to a couple years ago. I mean, that would be a huge mess. But the flip side of that is, you know, if the Timberwolves can somehow find a rhythm and win out, you know, that them hosting a series still isn't out of play as a potential four seed. I mean, I think it's a major stretch, but the possibility is still there, especially if Jimmy reappears here. So there are a lot of lingering questions, but that was such a a story that people were hanging on to in a positive way a few months ago. The Tibbs started to turn things around there. If you fall all the way out of the playoffs, oh, man, that is something that that's a hole I don't know if he'd be able to climb out of, because there's so much frustration within that fan base.
Well, who's the better team if there was to get an eighth spot? Is it the Timberwolves, the Pelicans, or the Nuggets?
Ooh, good question. I have not watched the Nuggets or Pelicans as much this season live. I would still lean towards, and I say this as somebody who does not believe in the Timberwolves, I would still lean towards you bring Jimmy Butler back, even playing 30, 32 minutes, which is probably where he'd be to start whenever he returns. I would take Jimmy Butler as a guy who could help push them into the postseason over those two other teams. For as great as Anthony Davis is, I don't think he's got a ton of other help on that roster aside from Jrue Holiday. And the Nuggets, I think they're still a year away from making a little more noise. So I still would lean on Jimmy being that difference maker, at least in these last couple games here.
My friend, as always, I appreciate your time. Oh, by the way, any thoughts on the Bulls?
Yeah, I got a thought for you, and it's something that you and I have gone through throughout the season. If I am the Bulls and I am trying to figure out what to do with Zach LaVine here as a restricted free agent, I've got a headache. We're talking about stress of being a coach or being a front office executive. I've got a headache every night if I'm Garn Pax right now, because he is the centerpiece of that deal that sent Jimmy to Minnesota. The Bulls were really banking on him being a cornerstone for what they were building in the future. And Hoodie, you know, at 22, 23 years old, the book isn't closed by any stretch. I mean, he's coming off an ACL injury. He can still improve. But from what I've seen, and just in talking to various people throughout the organization, I think they were all hopeful that he would have more of an impact now. And that was not the case this year. I mean, you can go back in time. He had a couple of nice games. That game against Minnesota at the UC, he was great. But if I'm trying to lock him up for the future, there is no way I'm giving him huge money. And in comparison, you know, a max deal for somebody in Levine's position, that would be about $146 million. There's no way I'm giving Zach LaVine more than maybe 4 years, $60 million. Because you cannot let him walk. Because that was your guy. That was the guy that you were banking on in the Butler trade. But, man, oh, man, if some team comes in and gives him a mammoth offer sheet, that is something the Bulls are really going to have to worry about. The key for them is, and the good part of where they're at, there aren't a lot of other teams in the league with cap space this summer. So there probably isn't going to be a lot of a market for LaVine. But I am just not sold on him as some kind of cornerstone for this team in the years to come.
It's just like me to save the worst for last.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. It's the Cubs and the Brewers. Find out the latest with Jesse Rogers. Jess?
All right, Jay Hood. Cubs leading 5-0 as we go to the bottom of the fifth. Just been a great game. Shows you what a day or two off can do for a team. As the visitors have 8 hits on for Brent Suter. They've been peppering him all evening. No long shots, though. All singles, doubles, a triple in there. Great base running by the Cubs. They're just playing a really heads-up game so far. And Almora, Baez, and Russell, bottom of the order guys, have the RBIs. Big Baez, big hit by Baez, 2-run single with Lester on deck. So that's the offense. Meanwhile, on the mound, Lester's been great, much different than the last start. His velocity is up, and he's just mowing guys down. It's a real smooth outing for him. This smooth game so far for the Cubs as they lead 5-0. Back to you.
And the Cubs are trying not to suck, right, Jess?
every night, but tonight they're doing a really good job of it, just like you.
You know, it sounds like that could be a great book. Where can I find that book, Jess?
Even during an update. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Costco, all over. Any independent bookstores in the Chicagoland area, my friend.
Try Not to Suck with Jesse Rogers.
Thanks, Jay Hood.
Jesse's the best. Put on the poll at ESPN 1000. Is Jesse not the best, yes or no? No, actually, put on the poll, Eric, at ESPN 1000. Is Jesse the best? Yes.
Or hell yes?
Yes. Yes, or there's no question, yes. Or something like that. Let's do Tales from the Hood.
What do you got there?
This is your car.
My car? I said a 10-second car, not a 10-minute car.
Pop the hood.
Pop the hood?
Pop the hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Here we go. Tales from the Hood right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Jonathan Hood with you. Sponsored by, well, no one at the moment. But we are looking for sponsors for Tales from the Hood. Since Northwestern, after the basketball and the football season, we have an opening. So for the summer, if you're driving around, you have a business, please call ESPN 1000, 312-980-1000. I think I got that right.
Sounds about right.
980-1000. We'd like for you to sponsor this silly segment that we call Tales from the Hood. We'd love to have a sponsor. Please call to say, hey, I want to sponsor Tales from the Hood. And sales will say who and what? Let's take a look now at the stories that we have for you for Tales from the Hood. How about this one right here? Oh, this goes back from last night. You might have to put this on the poll, Eric. So, this is from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Just a Merlot and a no-no with chicken and using your fingers to eat asparagus spears is perfectly fine. There's a certain etiquette when it comes to hot dogs. So says the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council. It says that you don't put hot dog toppings between the hot dog and the hot dog bun. Dress the dog, not the bread. Okay. Is that right or wrong?
That's sure. Like, dress the dog, not the bread. Who dresses the bread?
If it falls over to the bread, though, what?
I'm not going to eat it then. Sorry, my bread's dressed. I don't eat dressed bread.
If it falls over, I'm going to eat it just fine. Yes. It's no problem. Do apply condiments in the following order. Wet condiments, if you're pardon the expression, like mustard and chili first. Followed by chunky condiments like relish, onions, and sauerkraut, followed by shredded cheese and then spices. I'll put the condiments on the way I want to put the condiments on.
Basically, it's about vicinity to me. Whichever one's closest is going on first. Right. The next one is next. That's about it. I'm not thinking that much.
Get out of here, hot dog council. Craig Council. do not be hoity-toity with your buns, if you're pardon the expression. I've never done that.
No, I'm pretty free-willing with my buns.
I'm definitely good with with the buns. There's no doubt. The bigger, the better when it comes to the buns. She thick. Sesame seed, poppy seed, and plain buns are hot dogs are fine. Stop laughing, Felix. Felix is like, I like the big buns too.
Right, this wiener talk is too much for him. Seriously.
So Felix is all about the big buns conversation. I like it too. I mean, Canelo. Do eat hot dogs on buns with your hands. Utensils are verboten. Okay.
Well, I feel like that'd be more difficult to use a fork and knife.
Right. Some do, though. I do not.
Me neither.
The last one, though, is against us. Don't use ketchup on the hot dog unless you're under the age of 18. So this goes into the conversation of whether or not you should have ketchup on your hot dog or not. I know this is a Chicago issue. And let me just tell you, if you want to put ketchup on your hot dog, go ahead.
Yeah, eat your food how you want.
I mean, I'm not. Who's going to stop you? It's fine. Like, is someone going to knock the dog out of your hand? Just like, no way, man. You SOB. Don't do that.
Super Bears, Super Bowls. Just what you hear. Just like, meatballs knocking hot dogs out of hands.
No. Like, if you want to, okay. Put on the poll at ESPN 1000. Do you look at people with the stain if they put ketchup on their hot dog? Do you look down on people that put ketchup on their hot dog? Something like that. Yes or no?
I like it. So who do you think is the worst person? The person that puts ketchup on their hot dog or the person that ridicules said person for putting ketchup on the hot dog?
That's a good one. Do that. I think the latter is Kaplan. The latter is Kaplan.
Yes.
It's a 3-hour show for him. I'm just telling you that you can do whatever you want with your hot dog. That's all I'm saying.
Pardon the expression.
Pardon the expression. Thank you. And now Eric believes that's an expression.
Hey,
a year ago, you would have been fighting with me.
That's right.
It's not an expression.
I don't know. Let me look that up.
Miamisburg, Ohio. Investigators say that a Miamisburg house caught fire after the homeowner tried to kill insects with some sort of flammable device. Crews were called to a duplex along Montgomery Street in Miamisburg early Thursday morning. Investigators say that the flame started on the second floor and spread throughout the home. The homeowner told firefighters that he was trying to kill insects that were crawling around in his house. We always recommend, according to the fire chief, that you have a professional to kill your rodent or insect problem instead of you setting your house on fire with a flammable device.
Solid advice. Solid advice right there.
It cost $20,000 in damage for that duplex, by the way. No injuries, but this clown saw an insect in his home and was going to take it out with...
Does he got like a hairspray and a lighter, like blowtorch in this spider?
Or like
around?
A fire extinguisher. See, it's in a small town in Ohio, so you know drugs were involved.
Fact.
Right?
Right.
I've seen enough live PD or cops to know what's going on there. All right, let's take a look. Eric?
I think I might have found the worst kind of criminal. Man charged with trying to rob Girl Scout stand in Tacoma, Washington.
No!
Yes. Roman Anthony Mira pleaded not guilty Wednesday to second-degree attempted robbery for reportedly trying to rob a Girl Scout and her mother outside a grocery store, according to Pierre County Press. Police believe that the 23-year-old, along with an accomplice who is on the loose, tried to rob the girl and her mother outside of a grocery store on Pacific Avenue. Trying to rob a Girl Scout selling cookies would be among the worst ideas we've seen this year, prosecutor said. Jenny Dubois and her Girl Scout daughter, Haley Dubois. I really hope I'm saying that right because I feel pretty fancy that I'm saying Dubois.
Yes, very nice. Nicely done.
They were at the stand outside the grocery store. They said two men came up to them, demanded cash. The mother said that Roman Mira, the guy that was arrested, displayed a gun and said, "Give me money and you and your daughter won't be hurt. No one will get hurt." The mom just stood up and said, "Why are you doing this? Just walk away." Argument ensued and he ended up just walking away. No cookies, no money.
How about that?
Just embarrassed and arrested.
And arrested.
A bail set at $100,000.
Whoa.
Whoa.
You buried the lead there.
It was on the next page.
Oh, yeah. Oh wow.
Honesty.
$100,000. Now that's stiff right there.
But like, ooh. So the Girl Scout cookies are $5 a box now.
Yes.
So you're gonna, what are you going to leave with? $150?
If that, on a good day.
I'm robbing much bigger enterprises.
Again, it's rural Washington, right? You say Pasco?
Tacoma.
Drugs. It has to be.
I mean, marijuana's legal there. Maybe they were super stoned, saw some Caramel Delights, and were like, oh.
Wait a minute. I'm the Caramel Delight on this show.
Hey.
Actually, that's Jordan.
What am I, like the lemon sherbet or something like that then?
Probably so. Felix Reyes Junito.
All right, guys.
There he goes.
You know I have to start it off with the all right, guys.
I need a cigarette now. Oh, he gave me the all right, guys.
All right, guys. So I've been out the last couple of weeks, as you know. And
congratulations, bro.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
The baby.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Baby Canelo.
Baby Canelo. No, baby. No, we can't associate baby with Canelo anymore. No Canelo. Canelo.
Congratulations to baby you. Canelo. For being as cute as she is, future boxer, MMA combat fighter, baby Canelo Reyes.
Baby Canelo Reyes. So during these during these weeks, these past couple weeks, I saw. So I was telling Eric a little while ago, we were talking earlier, and I was like, millennials get so much attention nowadays, and they get ridiculed so much for things that apparently we do wrong. But have you seen Generation Z? I believe that's the generation that we have now, the ones after the year 2000.
After you and Eric.
Yes, that is correct.
Because you guys are Generation Y.
Millennials.
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 Right.
We get a nickname. So Generation Z, and 2 months ago, January, we had the whole Tide Pod Challenge, which I'm sure you heard of, which is stupid.
Yes.
Have you heard of the new one that they have?
No.
Condom Snorting Challenge. It's a condom snort challenge.
Yep.
So they open up a condom wrap, stick it up their nose, and then they inhale it and bring it right out of their mouth.
Inhale the condom and
up their nose
out.
And pull it
that
out.
That latex, and then they just pull it right out of their mouth.
No chance. That's so bad.
What's going on? I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm so thrown off by it. So I saw the title and I just watched the video and I threw off. I was so thrown off by it. I just couldn't anymore.
Okay, Felix, I have not seen this, but I'm wondering, okay, are you going French tickler or ribbed with that or just straight condom?
It's a good question. Or do you want to go like for her pleasure? Because it's going to be a little lubed. Maybe like the sensation will help.
You said it's a good question. You got to use it.
Oh,
I don't know how that works on Sunday morning with Chris and Adam, but yeah, I think you got to use it now.
I didn't even mean to.
That worked out.
Check out Good Question with Chris and Adam Sunday mornings at 8:50 on ESPN 1000. So I don't even know if that's the name of the segment, but I think it should be called Good Question.
We don't have a name, but it works.
But serious question though, like, are they going just regular condoms? Because there's different types of condoms, you know. I mean, I wouldn't know anything about those. I mean, it's like the Tim Doyle line of, what am I, a sailor?
You would assume that some would be easier than others, right?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not going for the magnums. That's just making it more of a difficult situation, right? Not that I have any line around anyways.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah. I'll let you borrow some.
Thanks.
Hello. Voice got deeper because you said magnums. It's me, baby.
Canelo.
Canelo. Yeah, I mean, if it's just one of these, like, these Department of Health, public health condoms, these random ones, it's like, it's no more than like a rubber band and a little bit of plastic, right?
Right. Yeah.
But if it's something significant, that's even more of a challenge. I would never do that.
I think you just gave a whole bunch of Generation Z people ideas. Because you just said it's more of a challenge.
Put that on the poll. No, never. No. Somerset, Kentucky, what a delivery. Pizza driver comes to rescue in house fire. A Kentucky pizza delivery man's customer service was on fire, literally. Donato's Pizza. Why does that sound familiar? I feel like I had that like in Cincinnati. Donato's, I believe it's in Cincinnati in Kentucky.
Its headquarters are in Columbus, so that would make sense if they'd be in that area.
Columbus.
There you go.
Because I was been there too, the Germantown area, the really cool downtown area for in Columbus. Donato's Pizza, the driver's name is Ralph Lettner. He was delivering pizza Sunday night to a Somerset mobile home park when he saw a home on fire. Lettner says that he ran inside, shut off the breaker, and found homeowner Jesse Decker trying to put out the flames. Says Lettner, I got down on my hands and knees because the smoke was everywhere. Made my way back to the kitchen and got him out of the front door. So how about that? Ralph Lettner, just a Donato's pizza driver, comes to the rescue and saves a life. Firefighters say the electrical problem caused the fire. He's
good.
A hero.
Yeah, good on that guy. I feel bad for the people who ordered pizza that didn't get it, though. Because he's saving lives.
Just had to give the swing there.
Well, you got to think about the other perspective. They're looking for their pepperoni.
Be part of the expression. Oh, no. Here he is. I already put it on Snapchat, Snapjay Hood, for those that want to see what Stosh looks like. I already put it out there, and he's back here again to interrupt the proceedings. Why?
This is his time. This is his segment.
Okay, yeah, no, it's our segment. He's got to get out. Out. Is he out now?
He's out.
Okay, one more. Can I do one more story? You have time? Do you guys have one more story?
Nope, you got them all.
Okay, I got one more story then. It's about Detroit poo.
Yeah.
Can I get that story?
Yeah.
Royal Oak, Michigan. Some visitors to the Detroit Zoo will soon be able to add animal droppings to the souvenir list. Free buckets of 5-pound animal manure, dubbed Detroit Zoo Poo, will be handed out April 14th as part of the zoo's Green Fest celebration. Buckets will be available to the first 1,000 visitors to the zoo's digester educational display. Green Fest is part of the Detroit Zoological Society's effort to improve green practices and facilities at the zoo in Royal Oak, north of Detroit. They're giving out poo at the Detroit Zoo.
If you got like a green thumb and you're trying to grow tomatoes out back, you need some good manure. Maybe gorilla manure is the best. I don't know.
Problem is, Eric, is that your thumb's not going to be green if you're dealing with this poo.
Certainly isn't. Imagine the car ride home.
I mean, actually, you know what? If the Sox keep playing like this, this might be a good thing for Brooks Boyer to throw away.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Hit me up on Instagram, IGJ Hood. Snapchat, Snapchat Hood. You follow me on Snapchat, I will follow you back, guaranteed. Just try. You want Snapchat? You might as well just follow me back. And I follow you back. Don't forget, we're going to hear from Jim Ross, good old JR Jim Ross, longtime announcer for the NWA and World Wrestling Entertainment. Hear from JR, his thoughts about WrestleMania because it's coming to New Orleans on Sunday. So we'll hear from Jim Ross at 9:35 right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Speaking of wrestling, John Cena was on Jimmy Kimmel last night because The Rock was on Jimmy Kimmel the night before. And The Rock was talking mess about John Cena, and John Cena, of course, had to clap back.
If you ever act up, he said to you, I will knock your teeth. Again, this is him saying this, not me. I will knock your teeth so far down your throat, you'll have to stick a toothbrush up your ass to brush them. What? Why would you say those things to me? I didn't say any of that stuff.
Who did?
If there's any confusion as to who said it, I'm just going to run right now.
Well, I'm not going to take that.
Dwayne Johnson
said that. No, I'm not going to take that.
I don't blame you for not
taking it. Listen up, Dwayne Johnson, if that is your real name. Because everybody around the world knows that your first name is T and your last name is He-Rock. You just pronounce it all stupid, and that gets me even more pissed off. Listen, if you think you're making threats to me by thinking shoving a toothbrush up my bum is a threat, I got some advice for you, pal. And by pal, I totally mean my best friend, and I don't mean it in an adversarial term. Watch Blockers, and then watch it again. Because if you think shoving a toothbrush up my butt is a threat, you got news coming, pal. There's been a funnel up there. There's been a parking cone. There's more traffic in that region than a Monday on the 405 in both directions. No, I'm not just going to take this lying down.
Don't blame you.
So let's analyze what a toothbrush and toothpaste does. It cleans, right? So your threat to me is you want to clean my butt? Oh, okay, pal. Okay, pal. You got the job. But if I was you, I'd bring a bodysuit and latex gloves. Because down there, it's like a Mississippi cornfield and downpour. It's just all mud and vegetation, pal. Okay, so the question I have for you, T-Hee Rock, is do you really want to smell what John Cena's putting out?
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Time to get busy.
Like we always do about this time.
Jonathan Hood.
Outside!
On ESPN 1000.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
He was going the right way! Cohen, all the way! Touchdown, Chicago!
There won't be some Rams renaissance with this Bears team. That's just not happening. Even with Mitch Trubisky, You may have the jersey, but you don't know what that guy really is.
To Markkanen, to answer. Come on.
Oh, bang, bang, bang. Sriracha.
Joseph Sikora.
I think I saw you in a commercial with Michael Jordan. Were you with Jordan?
With Michael Jordan, yeah.
What was your line in that commercial?
It is Michael Jordan.
That's all you had.
It's time to just look under the hood. No stone should be unturned.
I don't even know what that means.
A Louisiana couple is accused of attempting to rob an Uber driver.
Under the hood.
That the woman distracted by being topless.
With Jonathan Hood.
I got an agent underneath my hood.
Oh, it's a topless woman. Oh, I'm totally distracted now.
Weeknights on ESPN 1000.
Welcome in. It's Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app on a snowy Thursday night. Glad that you're with us. Hit me up on Instagram, IGJ Hood, also on Snapchat. Snapj Hood, you follow me on Snapchat, we'll follow you back guaranteed. We'll hear from good old JR Jim Ross coming up at the bottom of the hour right here on ESPN 1000. Jim Ross, a longtime voice of WWE Raw and SmackDown and pay-per-views during the Attitude Era and the WWE. We'll get his thoughts about WrestleMania because WrestleMania is right around the corner. I do a podcast called The Under the Hood with John the Hood Podcast. You can find that on Apple Music, on Podcast Addict, on Stitcher, wherever you find and steal your podcast. Just look for Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood as an extension of the radio show. So I'm going to play a portion of the interview with Jim Ross coming up at 9:35 in just case you missed it. And you can hear the entire interview if you just download the podcast Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. So we'll get to that coming up at 9:35. Glad to be here with you here on this Thursday night. Let's talk a little bit about the White Sox as we're keeping our eyes on the Cubs as well. Cubs have this game in hand. Anytime they go to Milwaukee, it's a piece of cake. It's no big deal. It really isn't. Yep. So it's the home opener for the White Sox at snowy guaranteed rate. And the White Sox lose 9-7 in 10 innings. For those of you listening to me for the first time, I'm a huge White Sox fan. It's the team that means the most to me in the city. Growing up on the South Side, I had a choice, either be a White Sox fan or get beat down. I chose being a White Sox fan in my neighborhood growing up in Calumet Heights. And so watching this team, I understand the direction of the ball club. I don't like the direction of the ball club, but this is where you have to do it. You'd love to see your team in the mix every year. But Rick Hahn, the general manager of the team, is taking this team and trying to get it in a position to win for the future.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
I understand, Rick. Yes. So, but the Sox lose 9-7. And here's the thing that I'm still trying to work through, right? It's April 5th. And I'm already aggravated. Not just because, it's a Sox fan. He's always in. No, it's not that. It's not that at all. Here's the thing. It's like, I understand that the Sox are going to lose 90 ball games or more this year because it's a young team. It's a mixed match of young players and veterans. So it's going to be tough this year. It's going to be tough probably next year as well. But I know that the future is bright based on the numbers I see in the minor leagues. However, as I always say, prospects are suspects until you see them on the big stage. Yoan Moncada went 0-for-6 today with 4 strikeouts. It's just brutal. And it's early, but hopefully he'll be able to work through the issues that he can be the everyday leadoff hitter. Will he be Ray Durham? Will he be Lance Johnson? I don't know. I'm hoping that Moncada can be one of those cornerstone players for the White Sox for the future. Matt Davidson is the real deal, though. Davidson, my goodness. He went 2-for-3 with 4 runs and 2 walks today. His slash line early here in the season, 318, 444, and 909. That's his slash line. He is raking right now in that number four spot. As Hawk Harrelson said in the broadcast, I can see you hitting 50 home runs. Yes. Hell yes. Pissed off. He said that today in the broadcast. He said PO'd. Wait a minute, Hawk. Hawk was very loose and comfortable in the booth today. I'll get to hear him with Benetti and Stone today on the television side. So watching the game today, this is a game that the Sox should have been able to win. Sox have Shields on the mound as a starter. Zimmerman, 4 1/3, 9 hits, 6 runs, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. It was apparent that Zimmerman just didn't have his best stuff. Sox got to him, but yet the Tigers got to the bullpen, which is going to be an issue for the Sox this year because, you know, we're talking about trying to figure out who's going to be the cornerstone guys for this bullpen moving forward. Is it Farquhar? Is it Jones? Is it Infante? Is it Bummer? Is it Soria? Who knows? You know what it feels like to me? Honestly, the Sox run feels to me like extended spring training. Meaning that there's still going to be a lot of mistakes, as we saw late in the game. I don't know how Lurie Garcia doesn't get to that ball. I don't know how he doesn't get to that ball late in the game. Trap that ball to allow the tying run to score. That just sucked today. But what you're looking for is improvement, steady improvement. So you can identify, okay, these are going to be the guys when the Sox are a contender in the American League Central. All right, so Rick Hahn.
A lot of this is behind the scenes or under the hood.
Yes. Was on earlier today talking about the White Sox. And Hahn was on with Cap and Company. Rick Hahn, the general manager, was talking about Carson Fulmer. Fulmer was the starter yesterday in the Sox win against the Toronto Blue Jays. And he thought that Fulmer had a very strong first start.
I think it was important for him. I don't want to overstate its importance to us in that we're not going start to start with these guys. We're not saying you got three to prove you're worth it and then you're out, or you've got 45 innings or 500 plate or 200 plate appearances or whatever. We're going to be flexible in terms of the opportunities these guys get, but we want to give them a meaningful opportunity. You know, Coop and Ricky really fought hard in spring training for us to take the longer-term view and look past the short-term struggles that Carson was having. And I think partly getting him out of Arizona so that his breaking ball had a little bit more bite like you saw yesterday, and partly just Carson knowing that, hey, you're going to get the ball, you're going to have it every fifth day, until we decide it's time to make an adjustment, so go get him. I think that message helped him exhale a little bit, and allowed him to unblock a little bit and perform at the level you saw last night, which was real, real good.
So thoughts there from Rick Hahn. He also talks about keeping your eyes on the prospects.
I'd be lying if I told you that all six of the TVs we have upstairs in our booth are set to White Sox games or even other major league games. We do funnel in the affiliate feeds, and we have some cameras down there, too, that even if it's not on the air, we can check out certain angles. We also have a conference room down the hall from the booth where we can jump in there and pull up on ginormous screens each of our affiliates' games. So not that the focus isn't entirely at the big league level and what's going on in the field in front of us. We're still aware of what's going on there, but this is part of the process. This is part of building a championship-caliber organization, is making sure we're all on the same page with not only how these young guys are performing, but how they're going about their business. What we're able to use these cameras even to watch batting practice or watch them take infield and see exactly if they're following the same regimen that we want followed from the big league level all the way down. It's a lot of what goes on in spring training is the player development staff and Chris Getz and his people and the minor league managers spending time with Ricky and the major league staff and really getting that sense of here's what we're about, here's how we teach this, and here's how we go about our business. And when guys show up out of the draft or acquired from another organization and they join us in A-ball in Winston-Salem, they wind up receiving that same message all the way through Chicago. So we're looking at performance, but we're also looking about making sure these guys are fighting each and every night the same way Ricky and the staff have them fighting up here in Chicago.
AJ Brzezinski was also on Cap and Company talking about the Sox rebuild.
So they've done a great job of stockpiling talent. Now, that doesn't mean they're all going to pan out. I know that fans say, oh, we got 25 prospects and all 25 are going to work out. Heck, most of the time if 3 or 4 of those guys work out, it's been successful. So it's not always a win-win, but I think they've done a good job of getting enough talent and enough good quality prospects down there, and now you're starting to see them trickle up to the big leagues, and now it's about development. It's developing them into the big league player they think they can be, and I think they'll do that. They have good coaches in place. They have good minor league system. They have a good manager that knows what he's doing. So I think they're on the right track. Now just you got to keep it going.
Josh Nelson from Sox Machine was on with us last night talking about the bullpen, how this is going to be a sketchy situation all season.
The way I've been breaking down games is trying to pull all the positives, because a lot of the negatives, Jonathan, are just going to be due to a lack of talent in certain situations or in key positions. One of those areas is bullpen. And with Rick Renteria on how he's handling the situation, it's going to be a bullpen for the Chicago White Sox this year, Jonathan. As far as the bullpen's going to be a roller coaster on how well these guys pitch, and games could get really weird late.
So thoughts there from Josh Nelson. He also talks about the ideal two-hitter. The two-hitter right now for the Sox is Garcia. So probably more times than not, we're going to see Moncada, Garcia, Abreu, and Davidson 1-4. I mean, Davidson's proven a lot here offensively. Abreu is a player that I want to stay with the Sox for the long haul. And I know that we talked about this last night after the Sox beat the Jays. Like, remember Eric, when Nelson was talking about, like, when Abreu becomes a free agent, that he's going to be on the market and people are going to want to pay $18, $20 million for Jose Abreu. Like, and I thought about that. I was thinking, man, he's going to have to put up some major numbers to get that kind of payoff. Like, I like Jose Abreu. Jose Abreu is not a star. Not yet.
He's not. And I actually, Josh Nelson said this yesterday. He thinks that he's going to make the All-Star game this year, the All-Star team this year. And if he keeps his, he's been a consistent player throughout his career. So if he can play consistent, his age is the problem. Like, I don't want to give him that much money.
No, I want
But his play does mess, but he's 31 already. So, like, how much money and how many years is he really going to get?
I don't mind him being the old head on the team, though. But
I actually, that's a perfect role. Like, I want him to be that.
But not at that price. And by the way, what kind of dummy gives someone that's on the wrong side of 30 that kind of money? Because we haven't even seen the best of Abreu yet. He's a DH. And, I mean, a first baseman, but a DH, right? He's not a clown over at first. He can play the position. I'm just saying that as he gets older, you want him to preserve his body, get him in there in a pinch every now and then, but he's a DH, really.
Absolutely. He's not saving outs for or saving errors for you at right. first base. He's not doing that.
So, okay, well, we'll put on the poll. Who's more likely to be in the All-Star game for the Sox, Davidson or Abreu? Now, I know that this is like a Tuffy Rhodes situation happening now with Davidson where he's knocking hell on the ball for the Sox, but say he's got 20-plus home runs by the All-Star break. And, of course, it's the Sox, and it's always that push at the end.
God. We love that final, though.
No, we don't love that final. It sucks. Sucks. Like, hey, he's been here all season. Hey, he's in the Final Four. Hey, they're slighting Davidson. Let's push him through. Punch AJ. Let's vote for Scott Posednik.
Punch AJ was a pretty good promotion.
I understand that. Brzezinski was good before you had to punch AJ, though.
Yep.
That's the whole thing. Just like you could have done that, like when the voting started, you know what I'm saying, man. So it's like Davidson will be in the Final Four. Hey, wait a minute. They're slighting Davidson and they're not writing about him enough in the Sun Times. Sox fans. I don't want.
They're not writing about him in the Tribune, but that's a whole other reason.
So some thoughts there about the White Sox right here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. All right. How about this? I found this to be very interesting. The Jay Cutler's wife, Kristen Cavallari, is getting her own reality TV show. Have you seen this? Have you read about this? Kristen Cavallari has been in the news as much as Jay Cutler when Cutler was hot in the city, right? Oh, just one thing. Let me go back for a second. Let me back scratch. Just to finish the Sox thought. With Brzezinski being on, and he was in the booth today, just hammered it up with the Sox, that's a guy that you want as one of your future broadcasters. Like, I know he's a national guy with Fox, but if Brzezinski's going to be around the city, that's the guy that you want as one of your future broadcasters.
Just that loose conversation, and you don't know where it's going to go. Like, that's what you want to, like, sit down and listen to in my ears.
Preferably on the radio side.
Yeah. Yes.
Listen to the trailing off laugh.
The final laugh.
Because he knows, man.
White Sox, they lose 9-7. Anything else, Darren?
Nope.
And along with Darren Jackson, Ed Farmer, 9-7. Mark Carmen with the postgame show. Sox lose.
DJ, warm up the car. Let's get out of here.
Pretty much. One foot on the car because the Sox lost. No, so Jay Cutler, his wife, Kristen Cavallari, is getting her own TV reality show. So is there any way that we're going to see Jay Cutler on the show? Please. Jay Cutler, who won't go on Instagram. Actually, there is an Instagram that Kristen did for him that is, I think it's called, let me see if I can find this. It is, If Jake Had Instagram. There actually is an account. If Jay Had Instagram. And there is Jay Cutler's wife trolling Jay because he doesn't have Instagram. So from the hills to E's red carpet, and she's now going to have a life, a view of her life as an entrepreneur and as a lifestyle tastemaker. So she's going to be all over this place. Is Cutler going to be on this? Please tell me Cutler's going to be on this reality show with his wife.
I bet he is, because there was talks that they were getting a reality TV show. Maybe that fell through and he's just going to be somewhat a part of this one.
That would be so funny. That would be so funny to see there, because you know how it is. Here's the reality shows. So it starts off with the same music you always hear for reality shows, right? And so it's a cityscape, where it's Miami or Chicago, wherever it is. And you see the city, right?
Skyline.
The skyline. And then the sky moves really quickly on those things.
Naturally.
And so now the scene starts with Jay Cutler and Kristen Cavallari walking down the street, walking their dog or whatever, or walking with their kids. And Kristen starts off talking about her life, blah, 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 blah. And then then we get deeper into her life. And then you smash cut to Jay Cutler sitting in a chair. Behind them is like family photos or the son or whatever. And there's Jay saying, yeah, I don't really know where she is. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to play her. You know, I don't really care. Miami, Fox, Bears suck. That's what you want. You want to get something out of it so we can play it on the air. But Jay's going to have to be involved with this somehow. The indifference of Jay Cutler on that show is going to doom it. I'm just saying, with him scratching his hair and chest, and there he is, just ticky and uncomfortable. I don't really want to be on the show. I don't know. You know, just like when his throat stepped on New Orleans.
Yeah, I struggle with that.
There you go. So
I'm curious to see... You know how like dads can act all different when they're with their little kids and like baby voice and run around. I'd like to see if Jay Cutler has like a dad baby voice and chases his kids around and stuff like that. That would be weird.
Kitchy kitchy coo and time for your baba. You know, you want, you know, milk, whatever.
Oh, whatever.
Yes, whatever. that's Jay. It's just indifferent Jay Cutler. You have, you know, beer. Here's some Bush beer. We got some Infamil. And we got some almond milk and Pepsi. Just like not caring, doesn't matter. The indifference of Jay Cutler. You have to have that on that reality show too. Itchy and scratchy and uncomfortable. So I don't know if I'm gonna play with Miami or be at Fox. I don't know. I don't care. Who cares? He doesn't care.
I'm a fan of a rhyming title though. It's gonna be called Very Cavallari. I like it.
Of course you do. Very Cavallari. But Jay's got to be part of that. Hopefully he'll get some parts so we can play it on the air, because I know it's got to be horrible. How about, here's something here that no one thinks about. So there was a time, and if you go to certain barbershops in the city, go to certain places online, you'll get this every now and then, but not as prominent as it was when Michael Jordan retired. There was always this theme of, man, Michael Jordan should be working for the Chicago Bulls or working with the Chicago Bulls after retirement. 6 titles in 8 years, or especially like when the late Jerry Krause was let go by Jerry Reinsdorf. They kind of moved him along in the organization and they want to do something new. Man, how come Jordan doesn't work for the Bulls? How come Jordan is not part of? How come the guy whose statue's out front at the United Center is not part of the organization? Well, because he runs his own organization. He runs the Charlotte Hornets. Once the Charlotte Bobcats, but now the Charlotte Hornets. So Michael hired Mitch Kupchak to be the general manager of the Hornets. It's a good hire because Kupchak has two championships with the Los Angeles Lakers. He's going to replace Rich Cho, who did a nice job with the Shaw team, but they just never got over the hump. You know, for you millennials that don't know the story, let me just rewind the tape for you and tell you what it was like years ago to take phone calls from people regarding Michael Jordan saying, number one, that Jordan should be working for or with the Bulls in the front office, or he should be giving an ownership stake with this Bulls team, like given an ownership stake. That's two things. We took calls on this a lot. The other thing is that when Jordan was generally managing the Washington Wizards and then went to get on his own team with Charlotte, people were like, man, he's going to be like the Pied Piper. Everybody's going to want to play for Michael because it's Michael Jordan. That was a narrative that I was fighting. Like, that's not happening. Like, people, you know, players can play wherever they want to play. It's not just because Jordan's there. Man, Jordan won 6 championships. You want to be part of that team. You want to play for him. How come we don't hear that in 2018? You know why we don't hear that in 2018 about how these A-list free agents don't want to play for Michael Jordan? You know why? Because it's nothing against Charlotte, North Carolina. It's nothing against Charlotte. The point is that just because Jordan owns a team doesn't necessarily mean that all these A-list free agents, like you never hear LeBron or you don't hear about Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or whatever the hot name is at free agency, say, you know what? Jordan's the hot name. That's the brand that you want to be part of. Now, you might be wearing his shoes. You might be wearing his gear, but you don't want to play for him. I just did just a slight little background on the Charlotte teams, the Bobcats and the Hornets. Do you want to hear this, Jordan Files? Do you really want to hear this? Because I'm going to hit you right between the eyes with it. This whole thing, and for those that didn't hear that back in the day, that was a thing where when Jordan retired, everybody's going to want to play for Michael, man, because it's Michael. And Michael's going to win a championship because Michael is a winner. Michael is a winner. He's the best basketball player I've ever seen. But as a front office / owner, it's brutal. Do you realize since he's owned the Charlotte team since 2006, coming into this season, the Charlotte franchise is 366 and 520. And coming into tonight's games, they're 34 and 45. Southside Math has them with 565 losses under Jordan's ownership since 2006. Damn near 600 losses. Oh, that's not on, Mike. Yes, it is. Damn sure is. Think about that for a second. Because everybody wants to play for Michael, right? And it has been abysmal. And they're going to fire Steve Clifford, another coach. And he's hired his friends before. He's hired people that he thought can get the job done. Hired Larry Brown for a couple of seasons. It's interesting. But Jordan is the greatest basketball player, if not the best athlete that I've ever seen play. But in that role, he's absolutely horrible. It's horrible. Because when you're an owner, just like everybody complains about Reinsdorf or complained about the Tribune Company all those years in the past, when you're an owner, it trickles down. And Jordan is a terrible talent evaluator. I know somebody that was in that room when they drafted Adam Morrison. And that person in the room said, Michael, you don't want to get this guy on your team. Michael, don't do it. Oh, he was great, though. He was terrific. Like, no, do not get Adam Morrison. And they paid for it. Bad draft picks. And they're growing like through the draft. Like, Kemba Walker's a terrific player. But that's not working at all in Charlotte under Jordan's leadership. And before you hit me up and be like, oh, wow, you decent Jordan, man. He's the dude. Yeah, he was as a basketball player. But you don't see free agents trying to flock to him and play for that team. Trying to settle down in Charlotte like, no, Mike, I'll help you. No. Because there's other places to go to play to win a championship. It's just not Charlotte. Jim Ross is next.
From your hood to J-hood.
I excel, then prevail. The mic is contacted, I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Hit me up on Snapchat, SnapJHood. I'll follow you back. Also on Instagram, IGJHood. It's the Cubs and the Brewers. Here's Jesse Rogers, who files a report. Jess?
Yeah, Jay Hood. Cubs easily playing their best game of the season. 6-0 in the eighth. Chris Bryant just drove in a run with his 501st hit of his career. It looks like Wilson Contreras might drive in another one. He just doubled. But the Cubs just pouring it on the Brewers. 12 hits overall. Everybody in the starting lineup, save for Anthony Rizzo, has at least one. He's had an awful night at the plate, 0-for-5. But the story of the night is on the mound. John Lester was fantastic. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks, no strikeouts. I guess his demise was a little bit premature because he has pitched a well of a game tonight. He's out. C.J. Edwards came in and struck out the side in the 7th. So the Cubs just playing great baseball from start to finish. 6-0 now in the 8th. Back to you, Jay Hood.
Jess, is it sold out in Miller Park?
No, I mean, it is half empty. This is a reminder, April midweek baseball. It doesn't matter the teams. You're not going to sell out. Now, maybe tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday will be different, obviously, with the weekend here. But I was pretty surprised. Good crowd in terms of Cub fans here. But overall, it's pretty much about half empty.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
It is Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs for ESPN Chicago and ESPN.com. Good to hear from Jesse as he filed that report. The Cubs are so comfortable at Miller Park. 6-0. It's easy for them. Yeah, the fan support. As I look up at the screen, I do see empty seats. Man, I would have been out there. That, I mean, if you can't get to Wrigley Field, you can't get a ticket, man, that's the place you go. You stay for a couple days if you can get the time off, of course. You stay at the Pfister, if you're proud of the expression.
The flu was going around, so that's always an excuse.
I mean, that's where you want to go, right? Because the Cubs are so comfortable in that ballpark. If you're putting a bet on Vegas, like, that is almost a guarantee the Cubs are going to win that game in Milwaukee. If nothing else, they win the series. It's seemingly all the time. I can't remember the last time. And you know what? I could, without even looking at numbers, I could completely be wrong. But I just don't recall the Cubs, like, losing a lot of games in that ballpark. So, I mean, that's just – it's just so easy for them up there.
How about that marketing strategy for Milwaukee?
Buy up all the tickets first.
Don't let the Cubs fans buy tickets, and they're the only ones at their ballpark.
But see, now Milwaukee comes across as and I say all, but some, you know, some Sox fans. Hey, it's middle of the week. My kids got to go to school. I got to get up 4 a.m. I got mass. Can you believe this? Brooks Boyer did this, and I love Brooks Boyer. I got to get back on the show. Some Sox fans complained about not being able to get to the Sunday games because they had mass. So do you remember some of those Sunday games being like 205?
I do.
Instead of 105?
Why don't they just put a chapel up and out on the concourse? Get it done.
The chapel is at guaranteed rate. Yeah. That's the whole thing.
That's what I'm saying.
They give out more than communion and wine. They give a whole bunch of
stuff.
We got
the beer cave downstairs for all you.
So, I mean, come on, man. He's like, hey, I can't, you know, the mass is at 1205. I can't get to the 105 game. Can you push it over to 205? And Brooks was like, yeah, sure. I mean, anything for the Sox, anything to help, right? Such a thankless job. That guy's got the toughest job in the city. I love Brooks Boyer. Yo, Greek Black Knight, House Music Knight. He always takes care of the fans. It's fun, man. Okay, so let me tell you about this. My podcast. Of course, all of our guests are on the Studio Hot Rods Hotline.
Cubs again. Cubs again. Yep. Tell you why. He's the best of all good guys.
Okay. So, my podcast, and it is the Under the Hood podcast with Jonathan Hood. You can download this. Now, Eric, you can download this on iTunes, Apple Music. You can do that on Stitcher. Spotify, not yet.
There? Hmm. All right.
They're being sketchy. But that's why we have TuneIn. The TuneIn app.
Love the TuneIn app.
And that's why we have SoundCloud. That's why we have Player.fm. That's why we have Google Music.
Yes.
We have a lot of these other places. So wherever you download your podcast, Podcast Addict is where I find my podcast. It's on my phone. It's on my, I am a big fan of Podcast Addict. That's where I get all my podcasts. So I get everything downloaded to my device as soon as there's a new episode. There'll be a new episode tonight, as a matter of fact. So Jim Ross was on the podcast, Young the Hood podcast with Jonathan Hood. You can hear the entire podcast. In its entirety, the entire podcast on the Under the Hood podcast. So Jim talked to me about a number of things. It's an hour long conversation, but we're going to give you just a glimpse of how good this podcast is. So Jim Ross talked to me about WrestleMania taking place in New Orleans, WrestleMania 34, going to be on the WWE Network. The main event is for the Universal title. And that is Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar. This very well could be Brock Lesnar's last appearance in the WWE as he tries to make his way back to the UFC. How many times does a drug user get the opportunity to go back to the UFC over and over and over again? It's amazing. So Jim Ross talked to me about Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. I asked him, what does he think that Universal title match is going to be like? Jim said,
physical. Probably under 15 minutes, maybe 20, under 20, 15 or 20, I'd say the max. And I got no problem with that, by the way. But it will be physical and straightforward. And, you know, like most of the wrestling community, I assume it's strange time. How many times can you be the bridesmaid and get close or seemingly be on that direction and then something happened? So, yeah, it has taken a long time. But, hey, look. I talked to him last year at WrestleMania because, you know, I signed with WWE on a Friday night in Orlando, and I was doing the last match of the show on Sunday night. And I talked to Roman about his status there backstage in Orlando, and he steered the course. I like him a lot. I liked him when we signed him. I like the fact that he committed to get his body in TV shape and not nose guard shape because he was a pretty good nose tackle at Georgia Tech. So I got no issues with it. I just think sometimes that stuff is overthought, and we make it, as fans, make things too complicated sometimes. And the whole deal is, if you don't like him, well, you know, you don't have to watch, really. And if you do watch, you can keep your opinions to yourself unless you feel compelled to share with the world how much you dislike Roman Reigns. But I think he's a keeper. If I had a territory and I could pick from the WWE guys to start a territory and I had 10 picks, he'd damn sure be one of them. So I hope it works out fine. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of dynamic it's going to be in the arena when that match happens. It's going to be interesting to see what that match follows and what follows it. So it's going to be a very compelling night. And the fans have made it very, unpredictable. It used to be you could kind of predict how the reactions are going to be. But now it's not as easy. So, but I think it'll work out fine. I think it'll be a very physical match. I don't think it's going to be if they lock up, it ain't going to be lightweights. They're going to get after it. And I think both guys like that. So you got two world-class athletes that have come from mainstream programs, the Minnesota wrestling program, the Georgia Tech football program. They're the real deal, and neither one are going to want to go down without a fight. And so I'm not trying to sell something that isn't going to happen, but my point is they're very competitive. And the last thing those two guys want is to not have the best match on the show. And that's going to be hard for anybody to have because there's so many good things booked.
Well, Jim, you mentioned earlier something that resonated with me, and that is that you have a lot of these multi-man matches, whether it's tag or for instance, the Intercontinental title. I think Miz has been great, but he's in a multi-man match as well as Randy Orton. So this is a great opportunity for the match we just talked about with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, and for AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura. Because it's one-on-one, one of those matches could really steal the show because there's so many moving parts in those three-man and three different tag teams in a matchup. The one-on-one still matters today in wrestling. So either one of those particular matches, I think, could steal the show.
You're right. And my money would be probably leaning a little bit more on the Shinsuke Nakamura AJ Styles matchup. I've called that match before for Access TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, and I say that, and I don't know why it's this way. When I came back from Wrestle Kingdom 9 and doing that show at ringside, I couldn't say enough good things about Shinsuke Nakamura, and I mentioned that to WWE very prominently, that I saw one of the most charismatic, unique talents that I'd seen in my career. And, you know, and I talked to him, you know, I found out about his, you know, being a fan of Freddie Mercury and Michael Jackson, and they influenced his creative and his artistic style. He's a badass, too. I mean, he's a MMA guy. He's trained. He's a killer. So, but we have not seen the best of Shinsuke Nakamura to date. I think that he had that great match with Sami Zayn on his debut, and they tore it up. I haven't felt compelled to say, well, that match with Shinsuke was one of the best I've ever seen. I've seen him in matches, I would say that. But I just think that he's either not comfortable or he's just getting there, that comfort zone, comfort level. Not comfort zone. That's not good. So yes. I think that match is going to be amazing. I really do. And whoever follows that, that's where you want to look at on the lineup sheet if you're a talent. Who's following Styles and Shinsuke? I wouldn't want it to be me because I think they'll kill it.
Well, I want to ask you as someone, I want to put your booking hat on, your matchmaking hat, because when you're in the back and two talents or four talents come up to you and say, Jim, you know, this is our matchup, and they say, okay, this is our finish, this is what we want to do. I mean, is it a possibility that Styles and Nakamura can go to someone in the back, a producer, and just say, you know, we want to lay out the match this way, and it will remind you of a New Japan match? Would Vince bust a gasket if they say, hey, you know what, we just want to go a little bit above and beyond what we normally do? Because maybe that's what's missing with Nakamura. We don't see anything close to anything that you call on Access TV with Nakamura, because he's down in the low gear now. He's in low two. He's not in drive, as we saw so many times in New Japan. Can a talent come to you and say, you know what, we want to do it the way we did, you know, Pensacola 81 or whatever it is, that the match that we have laid out? Could you do that? Could you accept that?
Of course. Okay. The goal is, you know, it's like, what did Jim Mora Sr. say? The goal is to win the game. Well, that's right. I thought it was Herm Edwards.
Herm Edwards, yeah.
The goal is to win the game. The goal is to entertain the audience. And whatever match that two individuals can best deliver to tell the story that the administration is desiring, i.e., they're going to put over, how they get to that destination is very subjective, and you want them to do what they think will get over to the crowd. So hell yeah, talents have been doing that with Vince for years. I mean, since I can ever remember, talents go to and say, "I got this idea, boss. I'd like to do this. What do you think of that?" And he's stimulated by that kind of stuff. Because guys come with ideas, not just with an empty wagon. Because like my granny would say, you can't sell goods out of an empty wagon.
Right.
And so they bring their wagon of ideas, and Vince likes some of them, some of them he doesn't. I would encourage any talent. You know, Bill Watts said years ago that if you're a wrestler, you come to your town that you're booked in, you should have three things figured out. You should know how to win, know how to lose, and know how to work a return. So the things you can do to protect yourself in losing, you need to have that game plan. The things you can do to squeak over and get a win, you need to have that game plan. And then if you're going to work a return, you're going to program this individual, then how do we address that? So always have those three ideas. Win, lose, or return, and I think that's kind of the, you know, you just learn it. It's just a process. But I think that of all the matches, this card Sunday, I just want to be where I can see things. Mm-hmm. I want to see Asuka and Charlotte. I love that match. I think Rousey and Stephanie McMahon will have amazing chemistry and magic because Stephanie's like her dad. She's a natural heel. I say that respectfully. She's cast beautifully. And the AJ Styles and Nakamura match we talked about, I haven't invested much, Jonathan, in the Battle Royals and the this and the that. So there's so much other things on there that, you know, it's like going to a buffet. I'm kind of going to the protein side of the buffet before I hit the chocolate syrup.
Right. The thoughts from Jim Ross, WWE and NWA Hall of Famer. Now, you can hear that entire interview if you just download the Under the Hood podcast with Jonathan Hood. That's all you got to do. If you listen to the podcast right to your device, you can hear the entire interview. It runs a little bit over an hour. He was tremendous. He said some things that I don't think he was supposed to say on that podcast. Some information that he gave and leaked out. But it's there along with Dave LaGreco does a great job on SiriusXM Busted Open. He was part of that podcast as well. It's my WrestleMania preview, right there. For those that love wrestling or hate wrestling, it's right there for you. The Under the Hood podcast with Jonathan Hood. We check the poll questions next.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Jonathan Hood in the snowy Chicago here on ESPN 1000, ESPN app. Let's take a look at the poll questions, Eric. What do we have?
All right. Is Jesse Rogers the best? Your options were yes or without any doubt, yes. 60% of the voters just said yes.
And the other?
40% said without any doubt, okay. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Which person is worse? Ketchup on hot dog person or person who hates ketchup on hot dog user? 70% of the voters say the worst person is the person who hates the person who puts ketchup on their hot dog.
Wow, that led.
Yes, I'm glad. Some sense.
Yeah,
some sense.
Very well done.
Who's more likely to make this year's All-Star game on the White Sox, Matt Davidson or Jose Abreu? Mm-hmm. Jose Abreu with 2/3 of the vote, 67%.
Matt Davidson, 67%.
Jose Abreu, 67%. Matt Davidson, 33%.
33%. Wow. Yes. Abreu with the lead. Let's see how that works out for the rest of the night. Interesting. Josh Nelson says he's going to make the All-Star game. Maybe he will. We'll see. We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Our thanks to you for listening. Our thanks to Jesse Rogers, Jim Margulis, Nick Friedel, and Jim Ross for being with us. Show produced by Eric and Felix on the other side of the glass. Don't forget to download the podcast, Under the Hood Podcast. Tell a friend. Leave 5 stars in a review. No, leave 1 star in a review. Just leave a review and click a star on iTunes/Apple Music. Thanks so much for listening, guys. And we will talk to you next time Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Chicks dig the long ball.